Like a lot of schools, the school in Gamble has a giant trophy case in the hallway. Most of the trophies in the case are for basketball or wrestling, but there are also a couple of plaques for victories in an event known as Future Problem Solving. If you're not familiar with Future Problem Solving, you might assume it's a course for aspiring mathematicians or maybe time travelers. It's actually a type of academic competition. And in the 80s, Gamble was home to a team of future problem solvers that did really, really well. I'm not going to say how well. You'll find that out later on. I'm Lauren Frost, and this is Story 49. A lot of the future problem solvers still live in the region. I was able to speak to Merle Passengock, who lives in Gamble, and to Ron and Carolyn Apangaluk, two team members who eventually married each other and moved to Wasilla. They still visit Gamble regularly. Together, these three told me a story that I promise will amuse, excite, and inspire you. Today's episode comes in two parts. In part one, we'll travel back in time and follow the future problem solver's journey, from the team's formation to its eventual triumph. In part two, we'll hear what the former problem solvers learned from their time on the team, and look to the future of education in Gamble. Part one, the past. This story starts in 1982. It was the first day of school. Merle was a junior in high school. Gamble had a high rate of teacher turnover, so Merle had met a lot of new teachers over the years. But this year, he noticed something unique about his new social studies teacher.
Well, right off the bat, he was different. I remember the first day of school when I met him. Previous years, you know, usually the teacher waits for us in the classroom, and we all file into the classroom, and we get to meet the teacher. But on the first day of school, of course, there was a lot of excitement and anticipation, and a lot of kids were going back and forth. And he was right there in the hallway, meeting and greeting us. And that's when I knew he was different. Like he was part of the hallway, part of the school, part of the community.
That new teacher was George Guthridge, a former science fiction writer living in Alaska for the first time. Over the phone, he told me about how he got involved in future problem solving.
I was asked by the principal if I was doing this thing called future problem solving, which I'd never heard of, and I thought it had something to do with debate, which I've never taught. But because I taught college, he said, because he wanted to see if we could get some school students ready for college. And so I ended up becoming the teacher for it. But I also never was trained in it, so I had to teach myself. Future problem solving is a very, very complicated academic competition. I mean, extremely complicated.
So complicated that it's kind of hard to understand future problem solving unless you've competed yourself. But I asked George to give me his best summary.
You have a team of either three or four students. You have no notes and no book, anything like that. And they're given a scenario, a set in the future. And the further you get, the more complicated they get. First, they start out fairly simple, a couple of sentences. And eventually, like I state, they're often page to 2 pages long. And then you have to identify 20 things that could go wrong with that. And to make any points, they have to be things which have a high probability of going wrong. And yet, to make some really good points, you have to come up with ideas that no students in your competition had thought of, and in the estimation of the judges, nobody would think of. Then you take one of those problems to be solved, and you solve it 20 ways. After you solve it 20 ways, you run 10 of them through this chart, which shows you which is the best idea, and then you write an essay. And you have 2 hours to do that.
A team was formed based on teacher recommendations. Four students would compete in the high school division, and four in the junior high division. Merle was in the high school group, Merle's cousin Ron in the junior high group. And they started meeting for practice. The first few practices were rocky. For the most part, the kids weren't all that interested in future problem solving. But Merle remembers the one practice when that began to change.
He gave us our first problem, and the first problem was your problem is there's an elephant in Sivunga, and we had to find ways and solutions to bring it to Gamble. That was our first problem.
So that was how he tried to get you hooked on problem solving?
Apparently. I remember all the ways that the class came up with, you know, walk it over, and take it over by barge.
The team practiced by working on practice problems. But when they entered their first regional competition, they had no idea how they would do. It turns out the answer was pretty well. They came in sixth place in both divisions. Only the first four high school teams would move on, but sixth place earned the junior high students a spot at the state competition. They ended up not advancing past state, but their experiences that first year were important because it proved to both students and teacher that their team could be competitive. Here's Ron.
I think that really inspired us for, you know, the next year. We started to believe, you know, we can actually win this if we really work at it.
George read the manual cover to cover over the summer. He came back with some new strategies. And the students were confident now, confident that they could win. This is when Carolyn, Ron's wife, first joined the team.
I was in eighth grade and I heard about it. That was in 1983, this future problem solving. Would you like to join future problem solving? And not knowing what it is, I said, yeah, sure, because I love to learn.
Carolyn competed in the junior high division. Meanwhile, Ron had moved up to the high school division with Merle. Carolyn and Ron remember how determined the team was that second year.
We had a mission.
Yeah.
And that was to win state.
You know, we'd call each other and make sure, are you keeping up with your studies? And, you know, we kind of kept tabs on each other.
Mm-hmm.
All that pressure came with a price.
But it was a lot of studying.
It was a lot of difficult. Studying. I mean, these things like rad waste or genetic engineering. And
the long hours.
And the long hours. And a lot of that was very foreign to me. I'm sure it was for everybody else. It was very difficult, but, you know, we told ourselves it's doable. And you just got to read, you just got to study.
You're staying an extra 2 hours after school to work on, you know, to study as a group. And then once you get home, you got your individual studies.
And these are big packets, big packets of information. You know, you didn't have computers back then.
Yeah.
No internet. I mean, it was all books, encyclopedias, and whatever it's related to that our little library had.
There was also a language barrier for some students, like Carolyn.
My first language was Siberian Yupik, so I had a hard time with speaking English most of my childhood.
Merle agrees that future problem solving was a huge commitment.
A lot of after school, a lot of homework, and during problem solving class itself. It was the most consuming class I ever had in secondary education.
All that hard work paid off. This year, both teams made it to state. Carolyn remembers arriving in Anchorage for the state contest and seeing her competition for the first time.
All those big schools were intimidating. They looked so well-versed and smart, and it was intimidating, but we knew we can do it. We studied hard.
Merle remembers a moment he shared with Ron just before they received the state problem.
I remember right before the competition, Rana Pangaluk, my cousin, just as we were going into the competition room, where there's a proctor to observe us, to make sure things happen fairly, he took my wrist and he pulled me back and said, we should pray. And I remember we went to the back room and we prayed. And I remember we just prayed. We didn't pray to win. We just prayed.
Despite not praying to win, that's just what happened. Both groups won their division. They were headed to the international competition in Iowa in a little over a month. George decided to prepare the team by taking them to Seattle. For 10 days, George, the assistant coach Bruce, and the team of future problem solvers stayed in a hotel and crammed. Here's Ron.
One of the rooms we converted into a classroom with a board, and we'd meet there every day and go over materials. And we'd take trips to, like, the University of Washington, listen to lectures there.
According to Merle, the team also spent quite a bit of time in the hotel pool.
Oh, yeah. They kept telling us the water was cold, but it was not compared to our lake.
At first, not all the kids were having a good time. A lot of them were homesick. The trip coincided with the whale hunting season in Gamble. Merle says it was really hard to give that up.
There was a conflict, especially in the springtime. It had to take something special to make the choice to delve into the future problem-solving program. And that was pretty hard. I remember Seattle, it was pretty tough hearing news from home that they were catching a game.
Their fixation on what was going on at home began to wear on the teachers as well.
George and Bruce were, I felt that they were losing it a bit because we weren't focused on what we were trying to do. So we were sleepless in Seattle. At least they were.
Between state and internationals, the team internalized an incredible amount of information. Here's George.
Don't know the national problem until you win the state. So everybody has equal amount of time to study for it. And it was on genetic engineering, and my high school kids, nobody on either team had ever even heard of it except my daughter. You know, I used to write science fiction, so she knew what it was. Nobody else had even heard of it. And in fact, a couple of kids on my junior high team didn't even know what a cell is. And yet, 44 days later, the national evaluators had to bring in a geneticist because they couldn't understand my kids' answer.
A turnaround like that necessitates a lot of studying. When I was talking to Ron and Carolyn, I got the feeling that George could sometimes be a little intense.
What I dreaded the most when we were studying, when I don't feel like studying or don't feel like working, is one-on-one time with George. I mean, he grills us. And that's what I didn't look forward to at all. But, you know, he helped us a lot.
So he would kind of test you to make sure that you had internalized the information?
Yeah, he would make sure. And then make sure again, because he'll ask me again, what did we just talk about? Because I had a hard time. The English language was kind of foreign to me.
Yeah, when we go through and we're talking to George, when his face turns this color red.
Here Ron pointed to his shirt, which was crimson.
But you know you haven't studied hard enough.
Did you ever feel like he was pushing you too hard?
I did. I mean, but I knew it needed to be done. I'm sure everybody felt pushed too, but we had to get it done, and that was our ultimate goal, was get it done.
Yeah, we were definitely pushed, but you know, I felt that he knew when to back off as well.
Whenever George was having one of his red face moments, fellow members of the team offered guidance.
When I was doing the individual competition, I felt so down. I didn't think I can do it. And I was studying by myself and I was frustrated, but Merle gave me a push. Merle gave me that extra help. He was a big brother. He was like a big brother.
Yeah, I think Merle definitely was the leader of not just the senior division team, but also our whole group, mainly leading by example. So we just kind of followed his lead.
Bruce Curry was a big help, too. He was with George. He had more patience and softer side in him to calmly
When George would have his moments, he'd have to leave the room and Bruce would come in and calm the situation and kind of hit the reset button.
So they kind of played good cop, bad cop in a way.
After those 10 days in Seattle, the team traveled to Iowa for the international competition. Carolyn remembers feeling overwhelmed.
Oh my gosh, it was huge. There were more teams than in Anchorage. It was a whole big auditorium, maybe as big as the Carnegie Hall. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but there were so many kids. I mean, there was kids from Germany, Japan. And
at the international level, a lot of the teams had hired experts like professional geneticists to coach them. Carolyn says her team tried not to let it faze them.
We just did our best with whatever studying we did.
The team solved their problem, and then they all filed into the auditorium for the award ceremony. Here's Merle.
Yes, I remember looking at the stage. We were far left, right near the stairs. And all the students that were in the competition filled up the auditorium. And what struck me was all the flags represented. They were on stage, and I remember looking at the Alaskan flag. And that's there because of us.
The elementary division came first, followed by the junior high division. Carolyn remembers the mounting suspense.
Oh, they were announcing the third place, the second place. And, I had no clue. We did our best, but oh my gosh, there's so many other teams. I'm sure they won. But when they announced the first place goes to Mr. George Guthridge's team from Gamble, Alaska, and we just looked at each other. I know you guys were jumping up and down.
It took a second where Bruce looked over at everybody. Like, did you just hear that?
He was sitting right beside me. Yeah, Bruce was.
The high school division was up next. That was Merle and Ron's team. Here's Ron.
It was their division, and they had just won. And they're all heading up to the stage. And, we're pretty happy for them, but we're thinking, I wish we can win too.
Yeah, but I know, walking back to sit down and the senior division awards were going to start, and I was thinking, oh, I hope they win too. They deserve it. They work so hard. And then when they announced it again, and we were the ones that were just hooting and hollering and just enjoying the moment.
I asked Merle what he was feeling when he heard that his team had won.
I remember feeling my smile on my face. I felt my own smile. I mean, if you feel your own smile, then it must have been something special.
Part 2, the future. Gamble competed in future problem solving for many more years. Some years they made it to nationals, sometimes not. Ron told me that they made a group decision after that first year to have more fun with it and study a little less. It was clear from my conversations with the team that their victories didn't matter as much as their education.
It didn't come down to winning or losing for me. It's what we learned, minds were opened up. In our quest for academic excellence nationwide or everywhere, you know, you couldn't ask for anything better than that in a child.
I really think that's when we grew up. New chapter, a new beginning.
Kind of a broader world view.
Yeah, broader world. That's a good point, yeah.
And as the students learned more about the world around them, they also gained a stronger appreciation for their own cultural background. Here's George.
My first day, they'll give you an illustration. We are supposed to have a class in journalism. And I said, well, let's make up the newspaper. I had about maybe 6-7 students in the class. And let's make it the best student newspaper in Western Alaska. And Ronald Pangaluk looked at me very seriously and he said, why should we even try this? We're just Eskimos. Nobody cares about us. 18 months later, the night before finals, and I didn't think we had a chance, and I think the kids were beginning to realize that I was worried, really worried. He said, don't worry, George, we're going to win. We're Eskimos. Same kid.
Today, Ron and Carolyn see a strong connection between their success at future problem solving and their cultural heritage.
The reason why we're here is the people before us. And they are natural problem solvers. That's the truth.
It just to have survived in this environment, it's pretty amazing to use what is around them, you know, the animals, the bones to support their homes, the walrus hides. They had to come up with these immediate, you know, solutions to survive here. You had to get it right the first time because, you know, living here, you can't try and try again until you succeed, because if you try it once and you end up getting killed, you know, hunting out on the ice, you have to know before you do it.
I think the students here, and I've seen it over and over, they are smart people. And I'm referring to everyone in the village. To survive the harsh climate and the daily challenges, you can't be lackadaisical, you've got to put your best and continue putting your best forward.
That last voice was Aaron Anderson. He's a special education teacher in Gamble. He agrees that the kids in Gamble are especially good problem solvers. That's partly why he plans to start up the future problem solving team again this year. Aaron says he's inspired by the team's success in the 80s.
I knew it meant a lot to a lot of people here, and I've always thought this, how can we instill or bring back some of the pride and develop and foster that in the youth today? And those that have gone before us have had success and also experiences that we can build on. Why not build that for now?
I asked him if he was nervous about living up to the reputation of the former team.
Well, every coach or every person that starts out an adventure hopes to, in essence, win the Super Bowl. Teams that win the Super Bowl, they lose some games. So if we lose a little bit, that's where we look at our steps and find out what we're doing wrong, and you adjust. And it takes time. It takes that effort. That's where the sweat comes in. And hopefully those that have been there before can say, yeah, this is where I had to put the work in. Roll your sleeves up. I did it. You can do it too.
George Guthridge and Marilla Passengock also hope to help the students of today based on their experiences. In 2006, George wrote a novel about the team called The Kids from Nowhere. The book mostly stays true to the real story, although some names are changed and there are a couple of heartfelt conversations on the mountaintop that Merle says never happened. Nevertheless, the novel has spread the story all over the world. George says he's received fan mail from every continent except Antarctica. As for Merle, his vision for the students in Alaska extends beyond his own particular story. And he uses this great metaphor to describe it. Merle sees traditional education as a ladder. Each rung represents a different degree. Bachelor's degree, master's, PhD. But eventually, you reach the top of the ladder. There are no more degrees you can get. You can't climb higher. Only Merle sees the education that Alaska Native students can receive from their elders as another kind of ladder. And if these two ladders were stacked, then Alaska Native students could reach incredible heights. It's just a matter of getting educators to reach out and work with them.
You know, many, many years ago, you know, indigenous peoples were objects on the bargaining table instead of co-partners. But I think the story tells otherwise, that we are equal partners in education. It's that only we have to be engaged as such. Our representatives, our senators, our educators, they need to look at the students, the children, equally. And that's, I think, what George Guthridge did. He couldn't do it his way as a teacher with his authority in the classroom. He couldn't do it. He had to look us eye to eye, soul to soul. He had to look at us. And I think that's what happened.
And that kind of goes back to that moment that you described at the beginning of this, where he was standing in the hallway amongst you, being one of you instead of apart.
Yes, exactly. I totally agree.
So what's Merle's advice for the students of today?
If you commit yourself, you know, things will start to happen beyond your control for the benefit of you, your school, or your community, or your state, or your nation. I encourage everyone, all the high school students and that are also in secondary education, to work with your teacher and aspire. It's a key word, is aspire. And then everything else will fall into place, as difficult as it may seem. Our story, I think, will benefit society after we are gone. I believe it's one of those stories.
Thank you so much to all who made this episode possible. Special thanks to Merle Passengok, Ron and Carolyn Apangluk, George Guthridge, Aaron Anderson, and everyone at the school in Gamble. Music in this episode was by Mystery Mammal, Andy G. Cohen, and Jawsar. If you or someone you know has a story to share, contact KNOM at 443-5221 or by email at story49@knom.org. Story 49, sharing your story, your voice, your Alaska.